What's going on, everyone? Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of Cinemania. I am your host, Marvin Sandoval. Really excited about today's episode. I have my good friend on today's podcast, Ryan Brown. Ryan has his Part 107 license, so if you like to drone or if you're looking to operate a drone and actually get paid for it, you have to have your Part 107 to get legally paid. Now, I myself am looking to get my drone license. I am in the middle of studying using Remote Pilot 101, and the first person that I ever went to for more information and more help was Ryan. Ryan has traveled to Iceland and he has an amazing series on his YouTube channel. And if you guys want to connect with him, check on his Instagram. It is BrownieX684. But he has so much knowledge. And in this episode, we talk about regulations and droning, but also starting your own business. So Ryan owns his own droning business where he drones for real estate businesses. And we just talk about the marketplace and how it's growing. So if you're looking to get a drone, just know that there's such a huge marketplace for that. And the opportunities for employment are huge. And if you're looking to drone in places that are regulated, like Class A, B, C, D, we talk about how to get authorizations and warrants and how the benefits of getting this license will be able to allow you to drone in really cool places where a hobbyist wouldn't. So enjoy the episode. Give the podcast a 5-star on iTunes. Enjoy, and we'll be back with next week's episode. See ya. When the faith seems lost, oh, gotta keep the faith. When the faith seems lost, oh, gotta keep the faith. When the faith seems lost, oh, gotta keep the faith. When the faith seems lost, oh, hey, hey. I just like the chillin', just record. Stay away from niggas talking when they ain't making no noise. How you call yourself a boss if you ain't putting on your boys? I just had to keep the faith. Welcome, everyone, to Cinemania. I am your host, Marvin Sandoval. Today, I'm really excited to have my good friend, Ryan Brown, to be on the podcast today. Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show.
What up, what up? Thank you for having me, man.
So for anyone who's listening, Ryan and I, we first met, through my younger brother. We all worked out together and it was awesome. And then through Campus Protein, it was really the way that I met Ryan. And he has been a huge inspiration and someone that really got me into flying in drones. And Ryan is really the guy that I went to when I was beginning to seek information about getting my drone license. And he's just a great pilot. But Ryan, can you give us, like, you know, just a breakdown of who you are? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right, man. I'm Ryan. I live in New Jersey, right on the beach, right on the Jersey Shore. That show was filmed like 20 minutes from where I live.
is it as crazy as it is on the show?
A little bit. It can be in the summertime. It definitely can be those summer nights. but yeah, I went to school. I got my degree in geological sciences from Bridgewater State University, which is up in Massachusetts, up by you. And yeah, that's how we met.
Yeah, man. And you got into drone. And tell me a little bit about the origin story of, you know, your first drone, why you got it, how you got into it. Tell me a little bit about that, man.
All right. A couple of years ago, I've just always just kind of been fascinated and like interested in them. Back, I think like the DJI Phantom 2 was like the first drone that I really like saw like on like the news and stuff, and just like the ability to get those aerial shots just like really interested me, but the technology quite wasn't there and neither were my finances, so I just kind of waited until like a refined product. And my first drone was a DJI Phantom 4, and I got it it was summer 20, it was two summers ago. So it was a summer 2015. I got it. So I got it when it was brand new. It was right before the Mavic Pro came out. And yeah, I've just always been fascinated by just flying and the ability to get those shots. And I just wanted to take my production to the next level.
And when you were beginning to drone, were you doing any video before? Like, did you have any experience with
ever flying a drone before? What was it like, you know, when you first started flying?
I had zero experience. I just kind of went into it not blindly. Before I make a big purchase or anything really, I like to do a lot of research and make sure that I'm getting the best one, and like watch a lot of YouTube reviews. And so I just went on YouTube. I searched like the best drones and the best footage. I had prior like video experience, and like I knew all about resolutions and focal lengths and just everything that I'm still learning. We're all still learning, but I had prior knowledge of that, and I knew what I wanted in a drone camera. And I just did more research on what I wanted in a drone, pretty much.
I remember the first time I have a Mavic Pro, and the first time I bought it, I was like, sick, I have a drone. And then it hit me. I'm like, holy shit, this is a really expensive piece of equipment that I'm going to fly into the air, and yep, hopefully it doesn't crash and burn. When you first blew yours up in the air, you know, where was your first flight, I guess? Bring me back to the first day you got your DJI Phantom 4. You're looking at your screen and you're like, holy shit, I'm flying something.
Holy shit, something. I'm tossing $1,400 in the air right now.
Literally.
Yeah. So I bought it at Best Buy, and my Best Buy had like a drone display, and they had one in stock, and I had wanted it, and I've been kind of saving up for it, and I had it in front of me, and I was like, holy shit, like, okay, I'm going to buy this. All right. It was kind of a snap decision. And I immediately like got home, I unboxed it and everything, and I took it right to the beach. Because it was just open airspace, no real houses, no real nothing. So I took it right to the beach, right to the bayside, because the sunset was kind of coming close. And I just tossed it up, and I flew it out. Like, I flew it like a few feet in front of me, and I got the controls. Like, okay, this one spins it, this one makes it go up and down, and like really, really basic stuff. And like just trying to figure out the app and like how things work. And and then I really just kind of turned it away from me and flew it out over the water. And that was the scariest moment of my life.
But you did it the right way, though. Like, you went into an open space. Idiot me. I remember the first time I got my drone, I went into Boston, which is super illegal for everyone listening, unless you have permission. But I went into Boston by Northeastern, and I flew it up. But it's one thing to watch the videos on how to fly the drone, but once you have it in your hands, it's so easy to get one toggle confused with another toggle. So yeah. I almost flew mine into like three different buildings like four different times. It was absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. Your first flight's always scary, but geez, and on Northeastern's campus, come on.
Terrible, terrible idea, man. And you actually touched on something that was like really, really subtle that I'd love to hear if you have any stories about this. But you know, privacy is huge, especially when it comes to droning. And when you mentioned that you're flying, you know, towards the beach, you're away from people, which is really, really important. Have you ever had any encounters with anybody that got really upset with the fact that you were droning, or even police? How did you, and if you did, how did you handle that conversation?
Okay, yeah, I have two situations that come to mind real quick. One, my old summer job, I worked at a bar restaurant that's right on the beach. And like a few days, like toward the end of the summer, it was just like really slow. And I was just like, okay, like I asked my boss, I'm like, hey, can I toss the drone up and get a few cool shots? And like the band was playing, and there were people around. So I tossed it up, got some cool shots of the property and everything. And like people were more like interested in it. They weren't like offended that I was videoing them. But they were just more like crowding around me trying to look at the screen. They're just like, oh my God, like this is so cool, trying to like see what I was doing. So that's always like a cool thing because everyone's just interested. And I've had 2 encounters with police. One was on my college campus. I was flying around, and it was like an administrator came in, like walked up to me, and she had a campus police officer with her, and she was just like, "Excuse me, what are you doing?" I was just like, "Oh, I'm just looking, like I'm just looking around at our beautiful campus, and like they were setting up for graduation and everything, and I was getting a cool shot around the big clock tower building." And she was just like, "Oh, like you're not recording, are you? Because that's our property." And I was like, "Oh no, absolutely not." Like, of course not. It doesn't even have a card. I'm just looking, flying around. She was like, "Oh, okay." So I got out of that one. And then there was another time in Connecticut. I was on some private school's like campus that I wasn't really supposed to be on, but the foliage was beautiful and there was just like a wide open field, and a cop walked up to me like as I was landing it, and was just like, "Hey, you can't be recording here." And I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm done anyway, bye."
It's always interesting because like you don't think you're doing anything bad, of course. Like most of the time that all the time that I've ever droned, or what I would like to think for most hobbyists flying a drone, is we don't go in with malicious intentions. We honestly just want to get
absolutely
really cool footage.
For
me, I don't deal with the police often. So when I'm like just doing my thing, like I see a police officer, I'm like, "Oh, you know, how can I help you?" Essentially.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we're just trying to get some really cool pictures and photos. And what's tricky when you're a beginner, you don't quite understand the parameters of which we have limitations and restrictions.
Yes. Yes. That's like that's like one of the biggest things, is understanding the do's and don'ts, what you can and can't do as a hobbyist or even a commercial pilot. Like there's definitely restrictions and there's places that you can and can't fly. And like learning those is like the biggest part, and just going about things the right way is, I mean, that's why there's rules and regulations.
Absolutely. And I think what's nice is that if for whatever reason you're flying and you're kind of new and a police officer stops you, you're going to bring the drone back because A, you don't want to lose the drone, but B, if you're honest and you say like, "I honestly didn't know," it's usually a slap on the wrist in the sense that bring it down, get out of here.
Yeah.
Which is nice for the most part.
Definitely.
Do you have any embarrassing stories from droning? Any crashes, AKA?
No, actually.
You've never crashed the drone.
Knock on wood. Knock on wood. I've had a near miss. So I've come very close to losing it in the bay. There's a big bridge that connects the mainland to the island, and they're doing like construction. They're building a new bridge right beside it, and I was getting this really cool shot of flying underneath both bridges.
Oh man!
And about halfway under it, I lost radio connection. And a cool thing on all the newer DJI drones is that when it loses connection, it hovers for a second and then it shoots straight up to whatever altitude you set it to, and then it returns to where it took off. Like that's immediately what the computer does. So I lost radio connection about halfway under the bridge and it shot straight up.
Oh my God.
Thank goodness that they, like, it was just steel grates above where I lost connection, and they haven't paved over it yet, or else it just would have slammed right into the underside of the bridge. But it somehow was right under an opening and it just shot straight up.
Oh, man. I'm just picturing that.
Yeah. And it was so close. One of the propellers clipped the steel girder, and it remained rock solid throughout. Like, I didn't even notice until, like, I think I immediately brought it back because I was like, whoa, that's way too close. Like, I don't want to try that again. So I brought it right back. I landed it and was taking the propellers off, and like half the propeller was gone. And I was just like, whoa, what? So
you're like, never again. Exactly. Never again.
Exactly. So I carry that little chipped propeller around in my backpack as like a reminder of, oh, this can happen. You got to be careful.
As an almost pilot, I've had two instances where I've crashed my drone, and both of them were just terrible ideas. I mean, I've learned that every flight could be your last, so
definitely
be careful. My first crash flight was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was flying my drone inside of a gym, outside of the gym, like flying outwards, but I was inside of the gym, so I couldn't see where the drone was going. So we fly it out, and it's going.
You were just looking through the camera, right?
Exactly. So I thought I had reached a high enough altitude to pass all of the electric cables. Clearly, I was wrong.
It got
electrocuted and then shot straight to the ground.
Wow, that's impressive.
That was a very sad day because it could have hit someone. Thankfully, oh, definitely. It did not. And then the second time, I was driving my car, and this is something nobody should ever do. This is, as I learned in my pilot's classes, this is the stupidest thing you can do. And it's not legal. Driving your car while...
Oh,
first off, that's a terrible idea.
Yes. First of all, that's unsafe driving and unsafe droning.
Both of which nobody should ever do.
Absolutely. But
crash the drone into a tree, into the river. And thankfully, so this was on a cold December morning. I would have had jumped into a river that was like 0 degrees to find my drone to be able to strip it.
But oh my gosh.
Luckily, there was two fishermen that were out on the river who happened to see the drone crash. They came on over and they fished the drone out of the river so I could send it to DJI. So to those two fishermen, if it wasn't for them, I would have been screwed.
I think I remember seeing that video of the crash in the woods where it just hit the tree. Hurt me to watch.
I was like so sad about it, but then I got the footage of it and I was like, all right, I will never forget this. And now yeah. I have my DJI. I love my Mavic Pro. I'm keeping it forever. I'm thinking about trading it or maybe going for the new DJI Phantom 5 or the Mavic Pro 2 or the new Mavic. No, not the Mavic. It's like a Sparkfly.
Yeah, the Spark, it's almost like a toy, that's like the very entry, it's like the size of the palm of your hand, like the Spark can't really do much. They just announced the Mavic Air, which is...
That is the one that I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I was very tempted to pull the trigger on that the other day.
It looks... Well, from what I read and from what I see in terms of, you know, the graphics, it basically does similar performance to that of which of the Mavic Pro, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's pretty much the same camera sensor. It's 4K. It's the same sensor, just kind of on a better gimbal in a smaller package. And I don't know.
More portable.
Yeah. I don't know how many, how much you've looked into it, but they have like two new modes. Like there's that asteroid like photo mode where it's like kind of a photosphere and then it like zooms out to where like it just looks really cool. And like all the DJI, like the photo modes, I don't know how often you use them. I don't really use them too often, but they can be really helpful, especially for beginners with all the all like the tracking software and everything.
Another thing about it too is that it shoots in 120 frames per second at 1080p.
That's slow-mo though.
Yeah. So I was strongly thinking about it. And another thing that's nice about it is that you can get DJI Care. So in case you crash it.
Yep. That's definitely something. Yeah. No, I have a Phantom 4. So, I mean, the quality is incredible. It's just big. I mean, I absolutely love the thing. It's just like a big, heavy backpack to carry around. And as much as I love it and I love the quality, I would like something smaller, but I mean, hey.
The thing is, it's not portable. And with my job, I use a Phantom 4 Pro, and I love it. Like you said, the quality is absolutely amazing.
It's absolutely unmatched.
For the price, especially, too. Like, you know, as you start to go higher in droning world, like the Inspire, things like that, those are crazy quadcopters. But the Inspire is something that gives you so much for the package. Yes. But the thing is, it's just so difficult to bring around if you're traveling internationally, especially.
Oh, definitely internationally. But yeah, no, the Inspire is obviously a dream, but the Inspire is one of the drones where it's almost made for you to have two pilots, one to actually fly the thing and another one to control the camera. And like, DJI has really cool software that allows you to do that and use two controllers and get really, really cool shots. But yeah, I've seen some crazy stuff where Inspire's just like keep up with like Teslas and crazy sports cars and everything. And, it's a really cool tool to have. Definitely.
What would you say is like some technology in droning that you're currently obsessed with? Like, when you're looking at drone technology, what is something that you're just like, oh my God, like I really want that? What's something that you're like obsessed with in the droning world?
Well, one thing I find like really, really cool is the, just all the new, like tracking technology and the ability for basically the drone to be able to fly itself. And I think that's really, really cool for beginners and professionals alike. Like, it basically, like, there's some modes where it, like, you set a radius and it just flies a circle continuously around and gets a really cool, like, surround shot of the area. There's cameras and, like, tracking modes where you can basically just draw a box around yourself and then go for a run, and the drone will follow you at a preset distance, and it'll just follow you or follow your car or follow your friend who's riding a bike down the street. Like, just that automatedness, you have to trust the drone and that the software will do its thing. Like, obviously you have to pay attention to it, but it's, I don't know, I just find that really, really cool and something to like ease into droning.
One thing that I saw in one of your videos was when you were on a boat and you had your Phantom tracking you down, going at a ridiculously fast speed.
Yeah, we were cruising. On that.
Is it scary when you have to like trust the technology? Like, personally, I've never had a situation where I'm in a moving vehicle or moving anything and I'm tracking myself down because I'm nervous. Like, I much rather have manual control and put it in sports mode, which is like a faster version. What about you? What do you feel?
Well, I'm like, obviously as I'm getting more experience of a pilot, I like to do things manually and like do maneuvers manually. Like all my like circling shots, like I've gotten good with doing that naturally with the sticks because I think that's just a smoother pan rather than like the computerized, which can sometimes be janky. But that specific shot that you're talking about, that was actually in sports mode, and I was trying to catch up because because we were going too fast for the tracking to follow us, so we kind of went out of the range, and I was just like, oh my god, oh my god. So I just flicked it into sports mode and zoomed it at 45 miles an hour trying to catch us.
It's crazy how fast these drones go, like in an amazing way. Like, it is fantastic the fact that you can go 40 miles an hour with the drone in the air. Like, we have that technology.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And then that can fit in a backpack and you can carry it with you.
it's smaller than a bottle of water.
2018 is a crazy time.
Now I'm seriously considering maybe purchasing a Mavic Air, or wait for the Mavic Air 2 or the Mavic 2. I'm seriously considering that now.
Yeah, no, I was very close to hitting that purchase button. Like, I had it in my cart, I had everything, but I thought to myself, like, okay, what if in 2 or 3 months, the Mavic Pro 2 comes out, the Phantom 5 comes out, like the Inspire 3, like something's going to come out soon, which I have a feeling DJI is going to do that. Probably like end of spring, like beginning of summer, they're going to have a big announcement because they're kind of due. And I think, like, then I'm going to look at what they come out with, look at all the features and compare them, and then I'm going to make my decision.
Because honestly, if a drone does 60 frames per second at 1080p, or even the fact 120, I'm looking at the Mavic Air still. 60 frames per second at 1080p, it still looks clean. 4K at 30 frames per second is awesome. Excuse me?
Yeah, so it was 4K at 30, right?
Yeah, so this does everything that my Mavic Pro does. The only thing that I could see the Mavic Pro 2 doing is shooting 60 frames per second at 4K. I think that's the only difference that I could see. And then, of course, 120 frames per second at 1080p.
Yeah, that slow-mo is what kind of wanted me to... wanted me to get it.
Everything in slow motion is definitely a lot cooler.
Oh, it's so much cooler in slow-mo. And there's only so much that like slowing it down in post production can do. So
without like destroying your footage, of course.
Exactly.
So Ryan, you are a commercial pilot, correct?
That is correct.
Tell me a little bit about that. Tell me a little bit about what that means for those who are probably interested in getting their drone license.
Yes. So basically, anyone who purchases a drone has to, it's over 2.2 pounds, I believe, or basically any serious drone you would buy, you would have to register it with the FAA. And in most situations at first, you register it as a hobby drone. So that means basically that you're just doing it for fun and you're telling the FAA, hey, I have this piece of equipment and I'm going to be flying it. And you're given kind of a set rule, like just kind of a little checklist, like don't fly 5 miles within an airport. Don't fly over 400 feet. Don't fly over large crowds. Basically use common sense with it. And yeah, basically the commercial license allows you to receive compensation for flying. So that includes anything video, land surveying, like pretty much anything that you would fly a drone for and get paid for. You need a commercial pilot's license to be able to get paid legally. Legally anybody can behave, but to do it the right way and legally, you need to this license. It was pretty simple process. I just kind of set up an appointment. I went to a local municipal airport and took, it was a 50 question multiple choice test, all on anything, you know, you're studying it, but anything from airspace regulations to different classes to NOTAMs to weather patterns and traffic patterns. And it kind of seemed like, I don't want to say overkill for what I wanted to do, or for the spectrum of flying a drone for hire, but I do understand why it's necessary, because airspace is no joke and air security should be definitely taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm very happy that I got it. The day after I got it, I purchased or got an LLC. So I started my own company basically with it. And yeah, I'm very happy that I got it.
So I guess a general question that most people have when thinking about getting their drone license, I think it's pretty simple. Is it hard?
The license part, like actually getting it?
Yeah.
If you study properly, no. It's basically like if you take practice, like there's tons of resources online, YouTube videos, free guides. There's classes you can take. There's practice exams that you can take. And it's very similar to all that. It's basically just use common sense. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what it boils down to, is use common sense. Don't be stupid with it. Don't fly into an airport. Don't record planes landing at from 100 feet away. Like I think a guy in it was like Tel Aviv did that. He was just like
flew around the plane.
Yeah, yeah, and like it was just like one person doing that ruins it for the other millions of people who are doing it the right way, because mm-hmm. the one person doing that makes the restrictions even more. So yeah, my advice is just use common sense. The test was simple. It was easy.
How long did you study before you took it?
About a month-ish. Mm-hmm. I found a free guide online. And like I read through it. I highlighted the important parts. I made flashcards. I just wanted to make sure I was really prepared, because it was my first time taking it. And you need a 75 to pass.
Got it. Got it. So what are the benefits of having a drone license? So, of course, getting paid. Are there any other benefits, anything that, you know, you could do versus a hobbyist?
One thing that having it, obviously, besides legally getting paid, is it kind of makes you look like you have your shit together. Like if say like a real estate company is looking for a droner, a pilot to to make videos for a listing, and they're looking at two candidates. One doesn't have, like, one is just some Joe Schmo who has a drone and is trying to market himself. And the other is Marvin Sandoval, who has this portfolio and is a remote pilot. And like, it just adds something to it that just makes you look professional and like you have your stuff together, which you should if you have the license.
Yeah. And another benefit of it is, let's say you want to fly your drone to Boston. No, typically you can't, because you're within 5 miles of an airport, and
yes,
that's typically a Class B or Class C. I'm not sure, I haven't checked, but I'm assuming it's probably Class B.
The area around Boston immediately is Class B, and then after a certain height it changes to Class C, I think. Yeah.
And what's nice about having the drone, the Part 107 drone license, is that you can actually file for an authorization to fly the drone. So let's say you are going to get paid to, you know, fly the drone around Boston or take a picture of the Prudential Center. So typically, if you're a hobbyist, you could quote unquote get away with it, but it would be illegal, because let's say whoever saw the picture wants to know who took the photo. It traced back to you. They see you didn't have an authorization. You could get in trouble.
Absolutely.
If you have a pilot's license, With that, you can go to the FAA, ask for an authorization. They're going to ask for your pilot certificate. You claim where, why, how, and the purpose of it all. And then you can actually ask for authorization so you can legally fly the drone in places yes. like Boston where you couldn't. So that's another huge pro to having your license.
Definitely. And even as much as like flying at night, like I have two exemptions. I have one for the airspace around my hometown because there's a heliport at the hospital. So I just have an exemption just for flying around, and that's good for like the next 3 years. And I also got one for flying at night, which isn't necessarily a good idea, but when you're getting sunset shots and you want to get dusk and like the lighting's really cool, you want to stay out a little bit longer. So I just got that exemption too. That's always good to have.
Oh, no, definitely. And I think what people need to know is that there is a difference between getting an authorization and a waiver. A waiver, people,
oh, yes.
is, you know, there are rules. Like, for flying drones at night, it's just warranted that you don't do that. It's yeah, like yeah, the no, law.
It's frowned upon.
Yeah. So you have to ask for a warrant for that, or flying over people. Or an authorization would be flying near an airport. So it's something that I've been learning, and it's like, whoa, these things are actually really, really important.
Yes, yes, big time, big time. Thank you for clarifying that.
Hey, the people got to know. The people have got to know. So you talked a little bit about, you know, the tools and resources. Are there any that you can think of off the top of your head that stood out? That comes to mind that, you know, could help someone who's listening to the podcast if they're looking for, you know, more information on X, Y, and Z, or something that you wish you had studied more, you know, what resource would you go to?
YouTube, honestly. It always comes back to YouTube. Seriously, the night before I went and took it, I was watching a few videos of like, oh, I just took the Part 107 test. Here's what you need to know. And they all mentioned METARs. They all mentioned METARs, and that's something that wasn't in my guide. So if I didn't watch those videos, I would have got those questions wrong because I would have no idea what they were talking about. And for those listening, a METAR is basically a weather pattern. It's kind of like a series of code that tells you the airport, what the clouds are doing around it, the wind direction. So, yeah, and so on, that you pretty much have to decipher. And there was four or five questions on METARs on the test. So it, like I was saying before, if I didn't watch those videos, I would have had no idea to study those. So definitely YouTube videos are a very good resource to help figure out what's going to be on the test. Because obviously a lot of people have taken it. A lot of people share their experiences. And it's good to hear from people who have taken it and passed.
And for those who are intimidated by METARs, my biggest piece of advice is just break it down. Because the first time I ever looked at a METAR, I was just like, what in the hell am I looking at? Because it gives you a series of letters, then numbers and letters, then more numbers.
Yeah.
And it looks like something out of like a computer code.
Yeah, that definitely. It's just kind of like a jumbled mess that it looks like it means nothing, but it's when it's broken down, it's very simple. And like the questions were simple, like you're given a line of code or a couple lines. And it was just like, what is the wind speed and direction in Fargo Airport? So you look at the code and see which one is for Fargo. And then you just read down the line and, oh, the wind's 18 knots north northwest. So it's very simple once it's broken down. So, yes, good advice. Good advice, buddy. Break it down.
Gotta break it down, make it simple, keep it short and simple. Like for me, when I first got the manual book that you sent me, the ones where it just broke it down, I was really intimidated because it's a lot of information. And for, like, most of us, like, if you have a full-time job, and then if you're doing other work like videography, like myself, it's difficult to find time to find out not just to study, but studying the right things, if that makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Because you can spend hours just reading mindlessly and not really absorb any information or be studying the wrong things. And
yeah. So using YouTube is huge. Personally, this is not a plug, this is not sponsored by anyone, but I did Remote Pilot 101. And it was $150. You get to keep it for your lifetime, and it's continuously updated, and it goes through everything.
That's
strongly recommended for anybody who's looking to get it.
That's huge that it's a lifetime, that it's $150 for the lifetime, because you do have to retake the test every 3 years in order to maintain your certification.
Absolutely. And that way you can go back. And what's nice is that they do updated classes. So what Remote Pilot 101, again, this is not sponsored by them, but what happens is every year they ask pilots who've passed the exam to ask or to respond with, you know, things that they saw on the test. So they update it, and with new episodes of, you know, this is what's going on, these are new questions that are starting to come up, because some things that are becoming more popular on the new pilot's exam is more situational questions, where yes. It's saying like, oh, this plane is flying into this airport north, and, you know, flying 360 north, and they're taking like a right angle or a right bottom. I forget the situational question, but essentially it was saying,
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And it said, like, if it's flying into the airport at 360 north, and it's flying northeast, where should you be looking as a pilot? So 360, it's flying into the airport, so it's going north. That means the airplane is looking to the west. That means you need to be looking to the east. It was just one of those like situational questions where I was like, whoa, I need to break it down.
Yeah. And there's like a drawing of the runway, and it's basically, you have to look at it as a clock. It's just like a big circle around the runway, and with degrees on a circle. And you have to triangulate basically where you're going. Yeah. There was a lot of situational stuff, and pertaining to drones too, not just airspace and general, like airport knowledge. There was a lot of situational drone stuff, like, oh, you're flying and you see an oncoming helicopter, what do you do? And then it's all multiple choice. So common sense, lower your altitude, get out of the way. And just situations like that. Like, basically, it gives you a situation, and then followed by how can you go about doing this legally? Or like, can he be doing this right now? Pretty much. So a lot of situational stuff.
No, definitely. And, I think this is also some really good information, because I just found this out. If you are looking to get your license, or if you already have one, there is this fantastic app called Verifly. For those of you who can't afford insurance, this is the perfect thing, where you pay $10 per the hour, and it gives you up to, I believe, like $1 million worth of insurance. So let's say you have a flyaway drone and it crashes into something and it damages property. You are covered as long as you put into the Verifly app the registration number, your flying certificate, the area, the location, et cetera, yeah. Et cetera, et cetera.
So instead of paying $1,000 a month for liability insurance when you're not doing a lot of jobs, it's really good just on the spot. You pay $10 an hour. I think the wage varies on depending on how much coverage you want and the area you want covered. And you just enter all your information, and it's really great. I've used it a few times, and I mean, I haven't needed it, thankfully, but it's definitely a must have just in case anything happens.
Now, you mentioned earlier, you know, you have your own business. Tell me a little bit about how that's going and just the drone market, you know, for people who are thinking about trying to, you know, make some money or go from just typical videography and are thinking about, you know, purchasing a drone. What's your current experience with the job market or just, you know, client base?
I've had a couple clients. I started it kind of toward the end of the summer, and then winter happens. So I haven't had too many clients because I live in a seasonal place pretty much. But basically what I did was I went to every, I got business cards, of course. And then I went to every real estate agency around and just popped a bunch off and was just like, hey, I do aerial photography. I do on the ground video. I can do tours of the house and I'll edit it for like, I'll do a package deal. And this is what I do. Give me a call. So I've gotten a few calls because on the water, you obviously want that really cool aerial shot of the house with the view, because that's a big selling point, is what view do you get? So it just adds that extra layer. So I've had a few clients. So business is going pretty good. I mean, I've kind of been really busy with my main job, which has nothing to do with video or droning. But yeah, it's going well. It's really cool to think that, oh wow, I own a small business. Like I keep getting mail from like Capital One trying to get me to open up like a small business account, or I could technically get like a company credit card and go crazy.
Charge
with
it
that.
On the card.
Yeah, and then write it off as a business expense. but yeah, no, it's just really cool being my own boss and being able to interact with clients and set things up how they want it and really be able to put my flair on it.
Do you see that the drone biz, or just like the drone, I guess, yeah, like the field of droning, you know, growing in terms of like job opportunities? Do you see it's like creating more opportunities? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, job-wise, it's skyrocketing. Not just around me, but everywhere. Like everywhere can use a drone, pretty much. I mean, from production, from like small productions to big productions to real estate to weddings, which is something that I kind of want to stay away from. But like, I know you've done a couple weddings. Have you used your drone during it?
I've definitely used my drone for some weddings. What's nice about it, I mean, I do a full package where it's videography and droning, but having a drone really amps it up in terms of storytelling. You get different angles. You can really build out the story. I find it a little bit more, and couples love it. I mean, anytime you see, you know, I did one in Stowe, Vermont, so you saw the mountains and the snow and the mountains.
I remember watching that video. That came out incredible.
Thank you.
No problem, man. See, my thoughts is not to kind of be devil's advocate. I've attended a wedding where the videographer had a drone, and I'm perfectly okay with it, like before and after the ceremony, to get like really cool shots to set the mood, show the area, like, and really get some good B-roll. But during the ceremony,
oh no,
it was very, very distracting, because anyone listening probably knows drones are very loud.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a fly just directly in your ear, except it's 150 feet in the air. Like it's, and especially the closer it got, the louder it got. And like, I couldn't really hear like the vows just because there's a constant buzzing. And I noticed.
Distracting.
Yeah. And I've noticed a couple people who were attending, like just
more concerned with what the drone was doing because you could hear it flying than the actual two people getting married right in front of them. Like,
that's
so
crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of why I would stay away from weddings. Like, oh, I'll video a wedding, absolutely, but and get the drone before and after. But during the ceremony, I'd be kind of iffy. If they really wanted it, sure, but I tend to stay away from it. That's just me personally. Anybody, I mean, to each their own. But that's always.
I am 100% in agreement with you. Like you said, it takes away from the moment. As a videographer, my go-to saying is I'm a fly on the wall in the sense that, like, pretend I'm not here. And the
absolutely.
Less, like, you notice me, the better.
Yeah, you don't want to, like, you don't want, one, you don't want to direct. You just want things to happen naturally. And, yeah, you just want to cap, that's your job is to capture the moment. And if within you capturing the moment, it takes away from that moment, then it's, then you're not doing your job properly.
No, I know. I totally agree. I can't imagine being at a wedding and seeing a drone. That would, or like during a ceremony, that would just be too much of a distraction.
Like before and after, or like during like the pictures, absolutely. But not during the ceremony.
Absolutely not. So you went to Iceland and flew your drone out there. Tell me a little bit about your experience in Iceland. But before we get there, taking your drone internationally, I think that's becoming more of a topic of conversation and the regulations. Yeah. Was it difficult to get your drone into Iceland?
No, it was surprisingly easy. I've traveled with it a few times. Like I brought it to Texas over the summer. I brought it on a few plane trips, but to Iceland, it was pretty much the same. Like just going through security, traveling with a drone. Never, ever, ever put your drone in your checked bag. That is like the number one. That is like the worst possible idea. One, because they treat checked bags like absolute garbage. So they just toss it around. And so one, that could break and damage your drone. Two, the fun fact, the luggage compartment is at a lower pressure than the rest of the plane. So the air pressure can really mess with your batteries. And because they're lithium ion batteries, they'll explode. And explosions on a plane are not the best thing.
No, not at all.
So my Phantom 4, it has its own backpack. So that was like one of my carry-ons. That was like I just had it. I had all the batteries with me. I didn't this time. I should have, but you should get like fireproof battery bags. They sell them on Amazon. That's just good for extra safety. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so the I forget the wattage, but I did all this research beforehand. Up to a certain wattage of batteries, like you can have as many as you want, but over a certain. You're only allowed like three. So really? I think like the ones for the size of the Inspire, like were too big. So you could only have like three, but thankfully I have a Phantom. So they're smaller. So, I brought three or four. But yeah, no, they didn't stop me. They'd stop me coming back, going through security, just because the high capacity of battery just kind of went off and it set the machine off. So they looked at it and they're like, oh, it's a drone. Okay. And then just zipped it back up and I was on my way. So yeah, it was surprisingly easy.
Yeah. Personally, I've traveled with my Mavic Pro and like my Mavic, excuse me. I love it. And what's nice is that it's so easy to bring with me, but I fortunately have not had any issues domestically, internationally. Who knows, like when you're going to Europe?
Yeah.
that might be interesting to see.
Definitely. It was surprisingly simple. I noticed no difference between domestic and internationally. Just as long as it's in your carry-on, they're okay with it. And if you get questioned about it, you should have nothing to hide. So there's nothing to be scared about, as long like because everything's legal. You're allowed to bring it.
And drones are legal.
Yeah.
So it's like you shouldn't have any issues. And yeah, I mean, unless you're going into a place where it's probably not the best place to fly drones around. I know there are certain regulations in certain countries, I think. Some in like India they have very strict regulations, I think.
Each country has their own regulations and rules to follow, and if you're traveling, you should obviously look those up.
Yeah.
Iceland was super lax in their rules, which I was okay with, obviously. They had a few like ground rules, like it was weird, they contradicted themselves. There was one, it was like, you're not allowed to fly downtown, but if you do, you have to be above the highest, you have to be above the tallest building. Like, it was like, you shouldn't do this, but if you do, follow these rules. There was one national park, which we weren't allowed to fly. It was a Thingvellir National Park. There was like no drone signs all over the place. And like that was understandable because it's a very popular tourist attraction, and like you're just in the Icelandic wilderness, so part of like that is hearing the waterfalls and just hearing like how quiet and peaceful it is. Mm-hmm. And again, taking away from the moment would be a giant drone buzzing around. And
no, you're right, and especially if it's a wild refugee like area for wildlife, you have to be mindful of the animals as well.
Definitely. And oh my gosh, I completely forgot about this. So funny story, because this ties into Iceland and droning. I've been to Iceland twice. I went my freshman year and my senior year on spring break. So this was March 2014. I'm in Iceland. This is my freshman year. I don't have a drone at this time. I just have like my little camera, and we're at this national park, which drones are now outlawed, but they weren't at the time. So we are like, we just like finished our tour, and there's this massive waterfall with like this huge canyon that like is perfect for a drone to fly down and then fly back up, like over the waterfall and get a really sick shot. So as we're leaving, we see some guys setting up these massive like quadcopters and hexcopters, like big, like $10,000-$15,000 drones. And I'm like, oh my God, like these are so cool. Like this technology is going crazy. And then one of the guys in my group was just like, oh my God, that's Devin Supertramp. And yeah. So I don't know if you've seen any of his videos, but he's like, he's a pretty big YouTuber. Like he's always doing crazy stuff. Yeah. So like we go over and like we meet him, and he's setting up these big DJI Matrix drones, like the huge ones. And he's hooking up. Yeah. He has two of them and two Red Epics, like cinema cameras. And which is the most insane, ridiculous setup I've ever seen. So this guy's standing in front of me with about like $60,000 worth of camera equipment. And I'm just in awe looking at this. So that was like one of my first experiences, like seeing a drone in person, was Devin Supertramp setting up to fly a drone in Iceland with a Red Epic, which shot 4K, which was unthinkable back in 2014 to be able to shoot 4K.
I would have probably shit myself had I seen that much just like gear.
Yeah, yeah, no, that much gear in front of me was just, it was unreal. It was like him and his team, and they're like, all right, we're going to go like shoot some really cool shots. And we're just like, yo, man, like.
It was freaking incredible.
Yeah, and then I'm assuming because of that, they outlawed drones in Iceland, or in that park.
When you have that much like of a platform, people will see everything, yes. And it'll get to someone eventually.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. But no, that was a really cool experience, and no, just and being able to have my own drone and bring it back the second time I went, that was just unbelievable because I had already gone, so I knew what the cool spots were, like what kind, and I was already like a year and a half in to being a pilot. So yeah, I didn't have my remote pilot's license yet. But I was a little over a year into flying. So I was really amped and like ready. And, it was just super cool to get all the shots I wanted. And, I mean, I'm very proud with how the two videos came out, and I actually have, two stills that I took. I got them blown up at Costco and framed on my walls. So, that's like,
what?
Yeah. So that's another crazy thing is like when I walk into my house every day, like I see them and I'm just like, wow, like I took those, I created those. And like, that's just like my dad absolutely loved them. And like, it was his idea. And like, I let him pick out the stills that he wanted. So that was just a really cool, like, that's a really cool thing.
No, definitely. It's always nice to see him progress and looking back and saying like, I took those, that is something that I did. It's really cool.
Yeah. And yeah, so like I went as part of a class. So I got 4 credits for going each time, which that's ridiculous. And at the end, at the end of the class, we had to present a project. And what I did was I made a really like cinematic video with all the shots that I took. And like, mm-hmm. like I put it with like this really dramatic, like movie trailer music. And, I actually entered it in the research symposium, and, they really liked it. So like I presented it to a bunch of people, and yeah.
No, that's so sick to hear, man. I'm happy to hear that everything's going well. As we wrap up, you know, our conversation, man, what advice would you give to, you know, pilots that are looking to get their license or hobbyists? Like, you know, what drone advice would you give a newbie?
Do your research before you do anything. It's a major purchase. I mean, good drones are starting to get relatively cheap. But definitely do your research before you make any decisions. Definitely have a plan with like what you want to do with it, whether it's a hobby, whether it's starting a career, whether it's joining a company, or so definitely have a plan, and have fun with it. Like it's a tool. Don't treat it as a toy necessarily, but I mean, be safe. Obviously, be safe. Do the right thing. I mean, use common sense. That's overall, just use common sense. Don't be stupid with it.
And, what I love is that you said like to have fun with it, because yeah, you're creating art, and this is something that can get you paid. But if you don't experiment, if you don't try new things, you're not going to get any better.
Yeah. Like, well, one of my favorite things is just waking up in the morning and going seeing the sunrise and just tossing the bird in the air and just seeing what I can capture. And like, it's just fun when you have open airspace and you can go 45 miles an hour and you're not necessarily trying to capture something. You're just flying for the fun of it. And that's, and getting that really, really cool shot. That's like one of the best feelings in the world is like, you're like, oh my God, that came out awesome. Like,
no,
it's
so true. Like, it's so worth it when you wake up early or you just find the right time and then you capture it. It's fulfilling yes. within itself.
Absolutely, it is.
As we're coming to a close, you know, I ask this to every guest that is on my show.
Yes, you do.
Ryan, if you had one superpower, what would it be and why?
All right. I've actually thought about this logically. And I would love to teleport.
Where would you go? Where would be the first place that you'd teleport?
Well, logically, this is really boring. But I would teleport home from work because the office that I work in is an hour away. So I have an hour drive each way. And sometimes I can get really bad in traffic. So I would love to just be like, all right, my work's done, snap my fingers, and then be home. Like, so that's like the really lame thing.
But it's a good answer. I mean, I would love to save the commute from work every single day.
Yes. Like that'd just be awesome. But like anywhere I wanted to, I'd just be like, oh, I feel like going to see the Northern Lights in Iceland tonight. Bang, I'm there. Like, oh, like I want to do this podcast with Marvin in person. Bang, I'm there. Like,
that would be dope. Could you teleport me with you to Hawaii to do this podcast while droning on a boat?
Yes. Deal. I will do that when I have these powers.
Damn. The things I would do to go to Hawaii and capture the sunset on a drone.
Mm-hmm. Like you can't be like, yeah, that's what I want to do with it. It's just like travel and not necessarily get paid, or obviously the goal is to like get paid to travel. But like just traveling in general with the drone, it just adds so much extra to your experience. Like you can vlog on, like you can just use your handheld camera and vlog the whole trip and it'll come out great, like fantastic. But just adding that fourth dimension of aerial video and getting that wide shot of the beach that you're on with like the city behind you, or like any B-roll, like any like Casey Neistat video, or like it just adds another element to your production, and it's just so cool to have.
It just changes everything. Like you said, it gives you a whole another dimension to play with.
Yeah. That's so much further than just your arm's length holding the camera out in front of you.
No, absolutely, man. And well, dude, this was such an awesome opportunity to talk to you, to catch up, learn more about you. And honestly, your information for people who are thinking about getting their drone license is invaluable. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And I appreciate, and I hope that someone who's listening can find value in what I've said. And I mean, feel free to, anyone here, like feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions or concerns or anything. You can find me on Instagram, BrownieX684. It's really basic. I got it in high school. but yeah, no, feel free to slide in the DMs and ask me anything. I'm open to anything, and hopefully I can help you out.
You have I know you have a YouTube channel. It's just Ryan Brown, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't post on it as much. I want to in the future, but because like most of the drone videos I make are minute edits for Instagram. Like it's very very rare that like I have enough footage for like a quote unquote full length YouTube video, if that makes sense. Because I like my like longer videos to have like a storyline to follow or something. So like 2 to 3 minutes is what I shoot for YouTube, but usually my edits are just like a quick 1 minute grab for Instagram. So follow me on there.
Perfect, man. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And everyone who's listening, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back again next week with another episode. Make sure to give this 5-star on Apple, iTunes, podcast, whatever that thing's on. But thank you guys so much. Make sure to check out Ryan. I'll make sure to keep his Instagram down in the description below. We'll see you guys next week, and we're out.